Good day and welcome to the podcast on the role and form of the rule of law in Canada. I'm Cameron Matee Johnson, and with me today are Dr. Jeffrey Myers and Alec Lowe.
Hey.
Both Alec and myself are students in Dr. Myers' seminar on the rule of law in the 21st century at Thompson Rivers University Faculty of Law. Now we're going to jump into today's topic with both feet. The current conception of the rule of law in Canada is largely articulated in the reference regarding the secession of Quebec in 1998. The court held that the principles of constitutionalism and the rule of law lie at the root of our system of government. Embedded within that decision is a discussion of the perception of tension between majority rule and the constitutional entrenchment of the rule of law. Dr. Myers, what impact has the secession reference had on the modern conception of the rule of law in the 12 years between it and the case of Canada and Qatar?
That's an interesting way to frame it. I think what's apparent now is that the first and most robust view of the rule of law before the secession reference was in the Manitoba Language Rights decision, right, in the 1985. And then in the secession reference, I think you get a really robust statement of the rule of law in the context of a possible secession of a province from the country. If you look, though, at the subsequent case law, it does seem that the courts have backed off a little bit from that high water mark, and have suggested, that the rule of law on its own isn't something which is sufficient to strike down legislation. That the idea that the courts have sort of since the secession reference, I think, have backed off a little in terms of articulating the rule of law as being a kind of underlying principle of the Constitution, yes, but not something that can, on its own, unmoored from a particular provision, ground any particular result. So, again, that doesn't mean the secession reference is not good law. It doesn't mean that the Manitoba Language Act, decision isn't still good law. But it means that the courts have been more circumspect, more careful, I think, in trying to tamp down a bit on the extent of the rule of law. And the Qatar decision is, a classic example.
The remedy that was invented and created out of the Manitoba Language Rights Act mm-hmm. was this whole suspension of invalidity. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of integral to that decision, mm-hmm. considering the entire edifice of law in Manitoba was struck down because it didn't meet the constitutional threshold. Does that not serve as a benchmark of other creative ways that the courts assert constitutionality and still protect the rule of law?
So one of the difficulties that the courts have encountered in the post-charter era is how to formulate your remedies, right? And so what happened in the Manitoba Language Reference Act was that the court determined that all of the province's legislation since Confederation effectively was invalid because it has been uniformly enacted in English. But in order to avoid having a legal vacuum in the province of Manitoba, it gave the legislation suspended validity until such a time as, or for a period, brief period of time, so that legislature could reenact all of those acts in a bilingual fashion. So it's an odd kind of conceptual move because it sort of suggests that, the current legal regime, in this case, again, the entire legal regime of the province, is unconstitutional, but we're nevertheless going to keep it in place as a nod to pragmatism, and it did create a disjunctive, I think, feeling. Now, whether, again, the real question though is, since Manitoba language, the Manitoba decision, and since the Quebec succession reference, if you can sort of treat the rule of law as being on its own sufficient to ground some kind of charter remedy.
Developing that further, doesn't the decision in secession of Quebec, with the current framework now, that it can't be overturned on its own given the decisions of Imperial Tobacco, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. doesn't that form a wedge for the court to have to reconsider, perhaps, the confines of the secession reference?
It certainly creates room for making distinctions of all kinds, and it does make it a somewhat, I think, uncertain in terms of what types of arguments one can make, solely based on the rule of law. I mean, I think it also means that, the rule of law is largely a doctrine of importance in administrative law in Canada, right? So, one of the things that I've done in this course is I've only spent, you know, this class and the next class, I'm addressing the, at least in part, the iteration of the rule of law as a concept of administrative law in Canada. But the rule of law, as it's articulated in the secession reference and as it's articulated, for example, in the Manitoba language case, are they're more than just that administrative iteration. It's, again, it's a substantive idea of the rule of law as a kind of principle which underpins the constitutional democracy, right? So so I think that, you know, to the extent that the rule of law is written as a kind of narrow technical doctrine of law, which is used in the context of determining the scope, particularly of judicial review and administrative law, versus being a kind of broader principle in a modern democracy, is really what's at stake here. I mean, what is the rule of law in Canada? Is it this kind of discrete idea within the context of administrative law, almost an idea that we might associate with natural justice, or is it something larger?
In regards to the secession reference appearing to double down on the importance of protecting against majoritarian rule, mm-hmm. To the expense of the rule of law and the rights of minorities, given the developments of since the secession reference, is it fair to say that the rule of law, and specifically when it comes to minority rights, has been substantively weakened?
I'm not sure. Why do you say that?
Well, specifically when you get to Kadir, okay. there will be issues there.
Right, yeah. I think the point that I've tried to make in the class here is that the rule of law is, is very closely tied to, the protection of minorities, right? And so that's clear. I mean, the principles that the four unwritten principles which the court articulates in the secession reference, they're not, they're very much mutually reinforcing, and the line between one and the other isn't always crystal clear. I think that the rule of law ultimately is, if it's about anything, it's about the protection of minorities. The idea being that the rule of law is a counterweight to, as we've said before, to the majoritarian democratic system. It's a way of preventing the abuse of minorities by the majority. So the idea is that the rule of law is something which stands apart from electoral politics and majoritarian democracies, and that's the way it's been conceived in the kind of Western constitutional imagining. Certainly that was the way it was imagined by the founding fathers in the US, and that's the way it's expressed in most constitutions. The idea of the rule of law is actually a protection on the excesses or the potential for abuse of minorities by majorities in democracies. So, has that kind of understanding, that robust understanding of the rule of law, been whittled down? To the extent that it becomes a kind of narrower administrative law question, I think that that's a risk.
Do you have anything to add on the secession of Quebec, Alec?
Not necessarily. I was just kind of thinking on Dr. Myers's last point, just on sort of how there's almost like a bit of a contrast or at least a conflict between rule of law and democracy at some times, and perhaps we see some of the hiccups and stuff in the case law because it's seen as this sort of like underpinning of democracy, but like oddly enough at times it might be like directly contrary to democratic values. So perhaps like it can't help but occupy an awkward place just by the very nature of what it represents to us and what implications it has on a democratic system.
Yeah, I like the point that Alec makes there. That is one that I want my students to take away. It's not necessarily, in bad faith or disingenuous in that sense to say that democracy and the rule of law are, related concepts or they're hand in glove, but there is an inherent tension between them. To the extent that we live our contemporary political culture celebrates and venerates democracy as the ultimate value, where democracy is seen to be in conflict with the rule of law, it is... something which can open up all kinds of fissures.
Yeah, I guess it's maybe a question of which piece of the Swiss Army knife we take out in the situation. I mean, they both have an important place, at least in our imagining of society. It's just when it's the proper tool to employ.
But they can dictate different outcomes.
Very true. Well, very true. And you sort of see that in like Well, even just like the outcome the court might want to get at, and sort of like the teacher's reference versus like Imperial Tobacco, like you see a very different appraisal of like the actual principles. Like it's even instead of like the outcome, sort of.
Well, we see strong, we see some vacillation between in the findings of the court. One moment, rule of law appears to be strong, and the other times it appears to be fairly weak.
Yeah,
it's and it appears to vary. Upon the powers employed and the compatibility or relatability of the defendant or plaintiff in the case, right?
I think also it has to do with, you know, questions of where you have this sort of kind of large scale, almost kind of existential crises for a political system or for the legal system. Then the rule of law does become this kind of grand idea, which is sort of used to sort of come out with a just result, particularly one which accounts for minority views. Whereas if you look at it in a like smaller bore sense of you know, due process, which is what, you know, in the context of administrative law, it looks like a different concept from time to time.
Well, especially in the case of what you say, these existential crises, we often see, especially in Western democracies, as torpedoing or at least putting rule of law in the closet to deal with the crisis of the moment. And then after the crisis had passed, we sort of open the closet again and say, oh, that was a mistake. We shouldn't have done that. But we have this long history of doing the same thing over and over again.
That's interesting, because which is why I think it's important, thinking about the secession reference, that was, I think, in fairness, I do think that the court deserved a lot of the accolades that it received for that decision. And I think what was quite brilliant about that decision was that it proposed the rule of law as a kind of as a necessary ingredient of the kind of proper course of behavior in the event of an emergency or of an existential crisis. Whereas normally, you know, we think of the rule of law being suspended in an emergency or a crisis, right? So, you know, if you go back in the Canadian example to the October crisis and the use of the War Measures Act, or if you go back, as we've studied in this class, to the, you know, to the U.S. environment and the environment of many other Western democracies in the immediate aftermath of the events of 9/11, and again throughout history, all the way back to the Roman use of the dictatorship, the idea is that you suspend the rule of law in a time of emergency to protect or safeguard the state itself or the policy from some kind of threat, right? And so what I think the secession reference did, and which really has made it a kind of widely cited judgment, even, you know, in European courts and in other jurisdictions around the world, and a widely celebrated judgment, is because rather than offering emergency as a place in which the rule of law is suspended, it offers emergency as a place in which the rule of law becomes substantive and front and center. So for that, I think it's a judgment that, you know, we have every reason to be proud of as Canadians. We were talking about, I was saying that I thought that the...
how it's been cited around the world.
Well, I mean, again, I don't want to overstate that point, you know? I mean, I think that what the court did was it did use the rule of law as a way of stabilizing democratic norms and stabilizing openness, transparency, and good faith in an emergency in a way that typically, you know, usually the rule of law is just suspended as a sort of inconvenience in an emergency. So I think it's an interesting decision in that sense.
But that's also part and parcel, as we learned previously, with our desire to legislatively get ahead of the next crisis, to reinforce the rule of law so that we learn from our mistakes, only to torpedo those very issues. When the crisis hits. So we might have the law on the books that says this is the rule for the secession of Quebec, but if it happens, right, or it happens in conjunction with some other crisis, who's to say that that rule of law is likely to last? Case history says it's probably not. We take a look at the Patriot Act in the United States, all of these suspensions of norms and rules wrapped in the blanket of expediency. I mean, we pass the Canadian Bill of Rights in the 1960s as a reflection of the Nuremberg trials. we do all of these, then they find out that those are toothless. All of these things are trying to reinforce the social mores of the time so that we won't fall victim to the next crisis. Yet there's always a next crisis. The FLQ crisis happened after the Canadian Bill of Rights passed.
Well, again, though, I think that the idea, the rule of law is really more of a, it's an aspirational ideal for sure. But I think that the, I don't want to, like, I'm not, you know, saying the secession reference is a perfect judgment or anything like that. I'm just saying it's a slightly different usage of the rule of law rather than viewing it as something which was an impediment to securing the polity in a time of emergency, view it as something which was a necessary component of having a kind of like set of rules around a situation which is not addressed by the written constitution, right? A few constitutions imagine the terms of their own dismemberment, right? And so, again, in that respect, I think is that what would happen in reality? Well, you know, what would happen in reality is that this would be expected to be a roadmap for any kinds of negotiations that went forward. I think it would be powerfully influential. We can't know. It would be pure speculation.
Thank you both. That concludes this podcast, and thank you for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. We'll